Well, I don't know what to think. I really don't know what to think about all of you. I mean, I have to be here because this is my session, okay? But Mark Robinson's in the auditorium, and he's going to reveal when the Lord is coming back. And I'm thinking, either these people don't care when he's coming back, or they really believe that he's going to come back when he's going to come back. But what a temptation. I thought, well, if nobody shows up, I'm going to go to his class. I want to find out. But I appreciate you coming. And I hope that I could be a blessing and an encouragement to you. This is my lovely wife, Connie. We have been married, just celebrated 56 years of marriage. And just to give you a little bit of information about us, I spent, after graduating from high school, went to Midwestern Baptist College in Pontiac, Michigan. And between my second and third year, Connie and I got married. So she spent 2 years there at college. And upon graduation, we felt that God had called us to the country of Mexico as church planters. And our sending church, First Baptist Church in Milford, Ohio, that you might recognize that church as the home of Bearing Precious Seed, a large Bearing Precious Seed ministry. That church sent us out. We didn't go through a board. We had at one time 50, I believe it was 56 missionaries that were members of our church that were around the world and as missionaries. And so we were responsible to our pastor and responsible to our the deacons and the church. Not against mission boards. It's just that our church and our ministry, we didn't need that because we had exactly what we needed. We had a church that was behind us. And so I spent 1 year on deputation to raise our funds to go to Mexico. For 6 months of that year, I did not go to one church. I worked on staff at the First Baptist Church of Milford. I showed up every day, just like the other paid staff members, and went out calling, door knocking, did whatever the pastor wanted us to do. It was a wonderful, wonderful time of training. Spent many times in the office praying with him and praying with the staff, visiting the hospital. A few times he'd take me on missions to counsel with certain people. And so it was a wealth of information during that 6 months. Now, I was young, and 6 months seemed like an eternity to me. Now it's, good night, this year's half over. Where did it go? But back then, it wasn't that way. And after 6 months, my pastor said, okay, it's time for you to go raise your support. And so I had already set a date that we would leave within a year. So we started June 1st, 6 months on staff, and then 6 months deputation, and then Connie and I, with our two babies, would leave for the country of Mexico. So my preacher said, he gave me a list of names, and he said, I want you to go see these preachers. And I have stories, all of us would have stories that could last days and weeks and months. But had barely enough money to make it in this circle that he wanted me to see the preachers. And I remember going to Fremont, Ohio. The pastor said, yes, we want you to come back, Brother Steve, preach on a church. That was exciting. And then I went to Coshocton, Ohio. Brother Smith was the pastor. And back then we had payphones. And I put my dime in the payphone and called him up, and he answered the phone. And I told him who I was, and he said, yes, we would love to have you. And I think it was about 5 o'clock in the evening. And he said to me, Brother Steve, where you are you in Coshocton? I said, yes, I'm at a payphone here. He said, well, where are you spending the night? And I was such a timid, I mean, I was so timid. I said, Oh, no, I'm fine. I don't need anything. I'm okay. I just could plan on sleeping in my car. And he said, no. He said, I want you to come to my house. And I went to his house. And what a gracious pastor. And I tell you all of this because this is part of training. This is part of preparation. He took me to a room, and in that room, it was his son's bedroom. And there was a picture on the wall of a casket and his son in that casket. His son, just the winter before, had drowned their only child in a pond. I looked at that and I thought, wow. But that man was so gracious to me. That encouraged me of how God was supplying and taking care of me. Little did I know that these were the beginning of trials and testings that God would prepare me for the future of what he would have in store for me. And God has a great future for all of you. And all of these trials and all of these testings are in preparation for that. And so we finished that. We finished 6 months of our dedication. Our home church was giving us $250 a month. I had to raise $250. I had $250 promised, but I had about $175 of that coming in. And I said, Brother Keene, I'm ready to go. I mean, we had excitement and zeal, very little knowledge, but we had excitement and zeal. We couldn't wait to get to the mission field. And he said, Steve, are you sure you're ready? I said, I'm ready. We're ready to go. Connie's ready. The babies were ready because they couldn't speak, but they I'm sure that they were ready. And the time came, the church sent us off. You know, back then we had no cell phone. The only charge card I had was a Sears charge card. That was it. And a checkbook. And we headed off to Mexico. I was 23 and Connie was 21 years of age with two little babies, heading to southern Mexico, south of Mexico City. And we spent 2 years in training. And that was an important part. Our training at Bible College, our training under our pastor, that prepared us for a lot. One of the things Brother Keene said, Steve, I want you to do this wedding. I'd never done a wedding before. And he said, don't worry about it. I don't think they're going to show up. I mean, why would he even say that to me? How does somebody say they're going to get married? They don't show up. And lo and behold, they didn't show up. So I didn't have to do the wedding. He kind of knew that they weren't going to do that. But all of that training and preparation. And then we committed to a great veteran missionary, Dr. Ralph McCoy. I mean, a hero of the faith. And we committed to work 2 years. That's part of all of this too, commitment. We committed 2 years to work with him to do whatever he wanted us to do while we were in language school. And we did that. We lived 1 year in Cuernavaca, Morelos. That's just south of Mexico City. And we attended church there. Did we make mistakes? Oh my, did we make a bunch of mistakes. They didn't have any electric in the church. So at Sunday night and Wednesday night, they had candles they would put. Can you imagine trying to keep your little toddlers? They wanted to play with that fire. And we couldn't understand anything. And so we and another missionary decided that we were not going to go to church on Wednesday night because we didn't understand anything. We were going to have Bible study in our house without the veteran missionary knowing this. So lo and behold, for some reason, the veteran missionary called our pastor and said, you know, your missionaries are not coming to church on Wednesday night. Guess what happened? My pastor called me. Steve, are you guys not going to church on Wednesday night? All over the King, we're having church in our house. Steve, you go to church on Wednesday night, whether you like it or not, whether you can understand or not. Okay, yes, sir. All part of that training, you see. What we thought was okay to do wasn't the right thing to do. So we committed to that veteran mission there for 2 years. We lived in Xalapa Guerrero up in the mountains with the Mixteco Nahua Indians in the children's home. We, Connie and I, were the only white people in that village, in that town. One day she goes to the market. She comes home. She says, I'm not, if you want food, you'll have to go to the market. I'm not going back there anymore. Because going to the market, she had to pass the jail. And she had no idea what they were saying, but it didn't sound like it was very good. One day she came home with a whole bunch of soap. I said, honey, we were going to have lunch and you were going to buy ham. I know. See, it wasn't a store. You had to order it. You were on one side of the counter. And so she went in there. And before she went, she said, now, how do you say ham? It's jamón. Okay. She went in and she says, I want, quiero medio kilo de jabón. I want a half a kilo of soap powder. And she brought the soap. She couldn't say that's not what it, she was so embarrassed, she brought it home. And so all of these trying and all of these times were preparing us so that one day when we left there under that training, we could go to Mexico City and start a church. Make a long story short, our first church that we started failed miserably. I went to pick up people for church, and one of the main couple, elderly couple, they were still in their pajamas. And I said, you're not ready for church? No, Brother Zeiner, didn't you hear? What? We've decided to close down the church. I'm the church. How do you, who closes down the church except me? And I'm, how old am I? I'm 26 years old. In their home, I broke down and cried and wept bitterly in their home. They thought that they had just killed me. I mean, they started crying. Everybody started crying. It just devastated me. That church, we tried so hard, it didn't make it. So we moved to the other side of town. Now we're talking to Mexico City. This is millions and millions of people moved to the other side of town. And we started a church there and just started going door to door visitation. Now, I'm timid. I don't think I'm so timid and shy anymore because knowledge helps you get over that. But back then I was. I told Connie I was going out to start our church. It's going to start knocking doors by myself. I'm rehearsing in my mind. We'd only been there 2 years, 3 years, and still my Spanish was not that good. I was rehearsing in my mind, good morning, buenos dias, como está usted, mi nombre es, my name is, blah, blah, all of that. And I come up to that front door, that first door, and I'm rehearsing this in my mind, and I'm thinking, oh, God, help me, please help me. And this lady answers the door, and nothing comes out. I said, nothing came out of my mouth. I couldn't talk. The lady looked at me, and she said, in English, may I help you? Yes, 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 you can help me. Yes, yes, you can. And what a blessing. That encouraged me so much. God knew what I needed. We're down the street. And I led to the Lord, Brother Carrion. Oh, boy, this is a long story. If I had time, he got saved. His wife got saved. They came to the church. The church started to grow. And God had given us a pastor for the church. The Carrion's son was studying to be a priest. And he was so mad at his mom and dad for attending the church. But he took that John and Roman that we left in their house, and he started reading at 15 years old, studying to be a priest, and he got saved. That young man went off to Bible college, became an evangelist, and then a church planner. He has started over 15 churches. I've been in some of those churches. He's asked me to come and preach the dedication of some of those churches. Unbelievable. I tell you all of that. A little timid Catholic boy who gets saved, And it gets a little bit of training, a calling of God upon his life, and he goes. He'll make a whole bunch of mistakes, just like you've made a whole bunch of mistakes. All of us do. But by God's grace and by his love, he helps us through all of that. And he's done that all of these years. I've been around some great men, and I've taken advantage of that. Make sure, with this church here, if you work at this church, you're around some great men. But even in the ministry, surround yourself with some people that are not all into themselves, but they're humble people. They're willing to help you. They're willing to be a servant, to give you some guidance and direction in your life. So in your training, choose well. Choose well. How many people go off to college, they spend 6 months or a year in the quit? They didn't choose well. Maybe they're in the right place, but then they just quit. I don't know. Maybe they're in the wrong place. Maybe they chose the wrong place to go. But choose well. Choose a good church, a good Bible-believing church. And if you'll do that in your training and in your life, you can't help but grow. So in this class, we're talking about staying power, how to spend a lifetime in a ministry. Now, I must admit, Brother Stringer called me and asked me just a couple of weeks ago if I would teach this class. I got a feeling that he kind of knew that I could probably handle this class because God has given us, Connie and I, an absolutely wonderful, wonderful ministry. 26 years as church planners in the country of Mexico. I don't know, a number of churches we've been able to start, train, pastor for the ministry. Then God called us into the Bearing Precious Seed ministry. We started the Bearing Precious Seed ministry of San Luis Potosí. And I had known about battles that would come when you deal with the Bible. My pastor told me about that. But I never realized that as soon as I started that ministry in San Luis Potosí, Mexico, that the battle would just begin. I remember meeting, I don't know if it was the first time I met you, Brother Stringer, up in Chicago. Maybe I'd met you some other place. I can't remember. But I had some really specific questions that I had to ask him about the Bible issue. And because the battles were really starting, it was over the textual issues. It was over the Spanish Bible. And so we started that ministry there. And then God moved us up to El Paso to take over for Brother Dimmer, said he was getting sick, taking over the Bearing Precious Seed ministry there that was part of First Baptist Milford. Then my pastor asked me to come and take the whole ministry, Bearing Precious Seed at Milford and Bearing Precious Seed El Paso, and run the whole ministry. God blessed in a tremendous way. But I realized that one day there was something lacking in the Bearing Precious Seed ministries. There's one step more that the ministry has. It's wonderful to print the Word of God and print millions and millions and millions and send them around the world. That is, and if you've ever been where I've been, to places where there's no Bibles and they're waiting to get one and the container is unloaded and these thousands of Bibles and the people, they're about ready to flock the place and take the Bible out of your hand because they don't have one. So there's a great need for that. But there was one other step that I realized that we were missing. And that was the step of Bible translation. I realized that what are we printing? What's the Bearing Precious Seed Ministries printing? Can I prove that this is a received translation? With your brother Zion, you could prove that. Just ask the missionary. The missionary will tell you what it is. Can't tell you how many times I called the missionary and asked him, oh yeah, Brother Zoner, this is a TR-based Bible. I remember we printed a Danish Bible, spent $35,000 printing this, a beautiful bilingual Danish Bible. And I took over at Bearing Precious Seed. I'm investigating all of these texts. And I called the missionary and I said, missionary, is this a TR-based Bible? Oh, yes, Brother Zinder, it's just like the King James Bible. I said, well, can you give me some history on it? I need to know. He said, sure. Guess where he went? Brother Stringer, guess where he went? He went to the Danish Bible Society. And he showed him the Bible that we printed. They said to him, where did you get this? This is our Bible. This is the United Bible Society, the Danish Bible Society. You have no permission to print this. Found out it was critical text to the core. It was not a TR-based. So you couldn't trust the missionary. He had not been trained at Bible college in these areas. He didn't know. So I could blame the missionary, but I really like blame the college or his church that didn't inform or didn't prepare the missionary for that. So in all of this, this what we're traveling through life, you're looking at somebody that is close to the end of his life. Now, I can say that to you, and you say, yeah, he looks pretty old. I guess he's going to check out anytime. I cannot say that around my kids, man. My kids, Dad, stop saying that. Stop saying that. You're going to be here a long time. Okay, well, all right. But one day I'm not going to be here. And he's going to take my place. So let me share some points with you that will... 1 Corinthians 9, 24-26, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth a prize. So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. Staying power. How to spend a lifetime in the ministry. You know, in Acts chapter 13, in verse 1, it mentions a few names there. It mentions in this order, Barnabas, Simeon, Lucius, Manion, and then last of all, Paul. But then when you go down to verse 13, we find now when Paul and his company. Now, Paul's the head of that. So Paul had spent some time in training. I don't know how long he was in Antioch. I could imagine what it would have been like in that church at Antioch. What a place. And these teachers and prophets and these ministers and all the things that they're learning. And I think they probably got so full of it, said, man, we got to go. We've got to take this information someplace else and let others hear about this. What a blessing. In our church world, where there is much talk about burnout. I mean, I hear that. I hear that word burnout. I have mixed emotions about that word burnout. We've been in the ministry 56 years. I've been tired. I've been exhausted. I just got back from Kenya. And it was a very hard and difficult trip, but an unbelievable, fruitful trip. But I got back. I was exhausted, but I wasn't burned out. I needed some rest. Jesus talked about that, didn't he? With his disciples, to call them aside, to rest. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do. But this thing, we never heard about sabbaticals. We're hearing about sabbaticals all the time. One of the churches that we attend, I think in the last 10 years, maybe he's taken 4 sabbaticals. I mean, he's a great guy. Great preacher. And if the deacons and the church are fine with it, who am I to say you can't do that? But we hear so much about that. And I ask myself, what is this burnout? Why are they using this? What's going on in that pastor or that full-time worker's life that's burning him out? And I look at my own life. Yes, we've had difficulties. Yes, there's been issues in our lives, but not to, I mean, there's been devastating issues in our life, but not to the point of burnout, not to the point, even in the lowest that we've ever been, I never thought about quitting. Never. I thought about the rapture a lot. Lord, please come. Man, it'd be great to take us out of here. Connie and I had to make a decision. I said, are you with me? She said, I've always been with you. One thing, Connie came to me one time and she said, Steve, I will follow you. And I've taken her many, many different places. I will follow you anywhere you lead us. But, I hate that word, but you must know that if you lead us in the wrong direction, we will all pay for it. That responsibility on me is because you're the leader, you're the husband. And so that I never forgot that. That means a lot to me to make sure that I make wise and good decisions. So burnout, discouragement, moral, we hear so much about moral failure. Why is that today? I think there's always been moral failure. I think it's always been there. Let me tell you, it seems to be rampant. I have a couple sites that sends me emails of preachers that and ministers and school workers that fail. I mean, it's every day I get this email of this guy, this person. Unbelievable. How does all of that happen? Why does that happen? And I hope that through these points that you have there, we realize how we can guard against that. Staying power and how to spend a lifetime in the ministry. This will help us to navigate the twists and turns and ups and downs as we travel this path of ministry. Paul described this ministry as a divine calling, 1 Timothy 1:12. And I thank Christ Jesus, our Lord, who hath enabled me for that he counted me faithful, putting me into the ministry. He also made it clear that we are the stewards of the mysteries of God. 1 Corinthians 4:1. Let a man so account of us and as of the ministers of Christ and the stewards of the mysteries of God. What a privilege. We count it a privilege to be in the ministry. Many start in the ministry well, with great excitement, great zeal. When we left for the mission fields, oh my, what a service we had at First Baptist Church at Milford. Our family was there. Everybody's there. They send us off with hats on the back, putting money. Wow, this is what the ministry is all about. And we get in the car, and Connie had never been past the state of Kentucky. And we get into the south side of Arkansas. And if you've ever been to the south side of Arkansas, it's kind of all Hispanic. And she says, are we in Mexico yet? She didn't know. I said, no, honey, we're a long ways. And then when we got into Mexico, if you've ever gone through Laredo and you get into Nuevo Laredo, which is New Laredo, it's not new. And you go past there heading to Monterrey, Mexico, and it's all desert and it's ugly. We had real diapers. And some of you are old enough to know what you had to do with real diapers. We've already eaten, so it's okay to talk about that. But we made it. We did it. We didn't think about it. I told somebody that the pastor that's from Beulah, that they're looking for a pastor. I said, I can give you five churches right now, full-time positions, that's looking for a pastor and they can't find one. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I don't know what people are wanting today. And so we'll start with one excited, new passion and conviction, but not all finish well. Ministry is not a one-time race or a sprint. It is a marathon that requires endurance, wisdom, and deep spiritual roots. It is one of faith, taking one step at a time. The goal isn't just to serve God for a season, but to remain faithful for a lifetime. So number one, recognizing your call. Have you been called into the ministry? Well, my pastor said, Steve, what are you going to do when you graduate? I said, I guess I'm going to go with the rest of my friends to the Vietnam War, because it was the draft back then, and surely I was going to be drafted. I said, there's no sense in being drafted. I'm going to volunteer and head off to Vietnam just like the rest of them. He said, would you go to Bible college? Well, I never thought much about education. I hated it. I couldn't wait to get out of high school. And I said, do you think I could do that? He said, sure, I know the president of the college. And if I could get them to take you on a temporary basis, would you go? Because of my academics. I said, sure. So I went. After a month or so there, and I thought, how long is this probationary period lasting? When are they going to tell me whether I made it or not? Little did I know they would take anybody. You didn't even have to. We'll take anybody. This is a Bible college, you know. If you feel like you have a calling, we'll train you. We'll prepare you. Now, I must be honest with you. It was a struggle for me. I didn't like studying. I didn't like all of that. But I made it because I felt God had something for us. And then Connie and I got married, and we're searching God's will. And we said, God will do whatever you want to do, us to do. Made a trip to Mexico just so that I would be missionary-minded as a pastor or a youth pastor. Got back, had no doubt God was calling us to the field. About 2 o'clock in the morning, God woke Connie up, woke me up. We were wide awake. I said, what's wrong, Connie? She said, I can't sleep. I said, I can't either. I said, I think God's dealing in her heart. Got down on our knees. We did not surrender to Mexico, because that would have been easy to do. Just got back from there. We said, God, wherever you want us to go, we'll go. If it's Mexico, we'll go. Wherever. He laid that burden upon our hearts, and we headed off. Now, from that time, God has moved in our lives to different cities, different towns in Mexico, different ministries, but all mission work. So I've never questioned our calling. You're going to have to make sure that God has called you. Because as we discuss some things that's ahead of us here, if you're not sure of your calling, it'll be real easy to quit. John 15, and you have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordains you that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. This is one of my key verses in the calling of God. God has chosen us, Connie and I, for a work for him. Philippians 3:13, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind. At Bible college, I worked at Truck and Coach, putting trucks together. Right before I graduated, my foreman came to me and said, Steve, are you really quitting? Yes. Hey, hard times are coming. I don't think I would quit this job if I were you. I said, I can't wait to get out of here. I said, I'm moving to Cincinnati. Milford, Ohio. I'm going to Mexico as missionary. We're going to Mexico as missionaries. Well, he said, Steve, you're a really good worker. I'm going to hold your job in case it doesn't work out for you. Well, I don't know if he's still holding my job. I don't know. I think the job's all gone. But those things were in the past for me. Trucking coach was not my future. I could tell you a few names of people that stayed, that went to Midwestern Baptist College and graduated and are still, are retired now from trucking coach. And when God had called them to do something, they said no. And it said, reaching forth those things which are before, pressing toward the mark of the prize, the high calling. Be certain of your calling. Your calling will anchor you when the circumstances will shake you. Never forget who called you. Did your pastor call you? Did your mother call you? Your father call you? Did a friend call you? Or did God call you? If God has called you, doesn't matter. Because wherever he's placed you, you'd be happy. At one time, Ciudad Juarez was the most dangerous city in the world, even more than cities in Iraq. And we ministered in that city. After we left and took Barry and Percy, see, my kids said to me, Dad, would you go back to Ciudad Juarez again? I said, no. Oh, yeah, because it's so dangerous, right? No, that's not where God wants us right now. If God wanted us back there, then we go. And no matter where he has called us, he's held his protection. Does it mean that harm couldn't have come? And it had at times, but we had God's blessing and his protection. Number two, daily walk with God. I can't emphasize this. It speaks for itself. Listen, if you're born again, you know exactly what that means, don't you? You know, without a shadow of a doubt, when you're not walking with God, do you have power? You absolutely don't. As a preacher, when I'm not walking with God, I'm just winging it, man. I'm just there's sermons that I put together that I didn't have the power of God. It's just my knowledge, I put it together. But it didn't seem to have much zap, nothing to it, because it didn't do anything for me. And so a daily walk with God. Micah 6:8. He hath showed thee, O man, what is good. And what doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God. Ministry flows out of your personal relationship with God, not just your public activity. Protect your devotional life. Prayer and scripture must remain your lifeline. Beware of doing the work of the Lord without the presence of God. As an assistant, it's easy to do the work of God because you're doing what your boss is telling you to do. I feel good at the end of the day. I did my requirement. But what happens when you become the leader? And now you're accountable. Or maybe you're not accountable to anybody and nobody's watching, but God is watching. Number three, build a life of integrity. Man. Only by the grace of God, God has protected us. I preached a revival, a Spanish revival in Dallas, Texas. And the crazy, stupid, ignorant pastor, and I say that now because that pastor fell into immorality. And I could see something, there was something about that guy. I didn't like him. But one of the churches that Brother Humberto Gomez, his brother pastors now. But I'm talking about the pastor prior. He was a crook. He put me in this house. And in that house, the second night, I said, this is a warehouse. What? Who owns this house? And he said, oh, it's a lady that owns it, and her and her husband are in a divorce. And you put me in this house? What if he comes in the middle of the night, the husband, and thinks, I'm sleeping with his wife? I said, I want out of here. You get me, sir. I'm not staying here at this place. I just think about circumstances like that, how that God has protected us. When we were threatened to be killed in the mountains of Guerrero, the next missionary that would go to the village, and I'm the next one that's going to go. And they come to our apartment and they warn us, don't go, missionary. And I think, if I don't go, how are these other Mexicans going to feel that I'm fearful to go? We have to go. So build a life of integrity. Because when the challenge comes to fall, or the temptation comes to do something wrong, you've already built a life of integrity and you'll know what to do. Proverbs 11:3, the integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Hebrews 12:1-2, wherefore seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witness, all of the examples that you and I have from those that we love that are faithful to the ministry and those that are mentioned in the Bible builds our faith and builds our integrity to make sure that we do the right things. Will your marriage be perfect? No. Is your church perfect? No. There will be a time that you might have to stand and say, I can't do that. I can't be part of that. That's where real integrity comes in. If you're asked to do something that's maybe not right to do, maybe illegal to do. You know, I pastored a church in the Juarez, and we had a lot of illegal people in our church. I had friends who were a police sergeant. I had friends who was the head of the Border Patrol of El Paso, and they were Christians. And I had a meeting with them one day. I said, guys, I need to ask you something. I said, here I have this church. A lot of our people are illegal in our church, crossing the border. What should be my responsibility towards them? And these two guys, I'll never forget, the head of the Border Patrol said to me, he said, missionary, are you a Border Patrol agent? Do you work for the federal government? I said, no, but I work for God. Good. He said, you carry out the ministry that God's called you to do. You leave our work up to you. I said, okay. And that solved it all. It was okay. Everything was fine. And that's what I did. Now, I had some rules and some standards. If they wanted to prepare for the ministry and they were illegal. Now, that was me. I'm not speaking for all the other missionaries. They can do whatever they wanted to do, but I would not prepare them. I would not ordain them. I just couldn't do that. But that's okay. If John Doe wanted to do it, he wasn't my enemy if he did that. And I never broke fellowship with other missionaries if they did do that. But for me, I didn't do that. I just didn't feel that I could prepare somebody for the ministry that is starting off on the wrong foot here. We got to get things straightened out. And we had many of them that prepared and went back to Mexico and started churches there. Number four, your ministry, minister to your family. Now, who's number one in your life? God. Who's number two in your life? Well, the church and my pastor. No, wrong. Who's number two in your life? Your wife, your husband, your family. What's number three? Well, that could be your church, your pastor, and that. So my first obligation is to him. Listen, he is perfect. He makes no mistakes. He's not going to lead me into something. Sure, but I remember Haggai. I remember the old. He asked them to do some strange things. Well, you're not a prophet. You're not one that he's going to use an example for a whole nation of Israel. Okay? He's not going to ask you to do that. One of our translators of the Telugu Bible, he finished the New Testament. He worked for Trinitarian Bible Society, and then he worked with us. And we had to dismiss him because he started to believe in polygamy. He started translating the Old Testament. He said, well, you know, polygamy is in the Old Testament. God never ordained it. God never said it was okay. I said, you're gone. No, you're not going to work. We're not working with you. If you want to continue on, that's your business. But praise the Lord, he didn't. And his brother, Rufus Sarapalli, took over the translation. So minister your family. It's not an easy task. All of us wish we could do things over again, right? I think all of us, if we could go back, oh, I wish I could spend more time with my kids in devotion. Yeah. So my punishment, that's not so much a punishment, but my vision because of that is I ask my grandchildren if they'll let me disciple them. And not all of them have agreed, but Connie and I have been able to disciple many of them, and what a blessing that has been. Some of them were really struggling. God brought them to a stronger place in their life. And what a joy. So your family is very, very important. Number five, walk in humility and be a lifelong learner. I'm 76 years old and I'm still learning. On the way up here, I talked to Brother Hafley and I couldn't explain to you what he said to me, but it was awesome. Well, what was it? I don't know. Ask him. It was awesome. And I said, I need that information that you gave me. And it's all about sound waves. It's all about energy and how that God spoke his word, and it's in those vibrations, it's in his word, it's in his power. Never stop learning. Never stop growing and learning. Proverbs 9:9. Give instruction to a wise man and he will yet be wise. Teach a just man and he will increase learning. Number six, endure hardship and disappointment. Listen, I've never been disappointed in Connie. I am sure she's been disappointed in me. I know she's been disappointed in me, but I'm glad she didn't abandon me. I'm glad she didn't. We're disappointed with our children sometimes, aren't we? But we don't abandon them. We love them and we care for them. Some of the biggest disappointments, you know, when you put all of this trust and all of this in your children and they turn around and slap you in the face, it hurts, doesn't it? But they're your kids. No matter what they do to you, you still love them. They're knuckleheads sometimes, but you still love them because they're your kids. But in the ministry, when your friends or your congregation do that to you, you've been transparent to them. You've allowed them to know things about you. And now they use that against you. Or they turn against you. And I don't care who you are, unless you're just such a hard person, you just don't care. And that would disqualify you from being a pastor, if that'd be the case. Those are devastating times. Rejection. We meet people that their wives have left them or the husband has left the wife. I think of a circumstance. We stayed in a home, Connie and I, up in Ohio. Oh, man. This guy was a jerk. He ended up abandoning his wife. He was a pastor of the church. We didn't have much money, and they had a singing group there. We drove through a blizzard to get there, And he said, Brother Steiner, we got to get, there's not many people in church, so we got to give the money to the singers. I'm sorry, we can't give you anything. You know what? We said, okay, it's no big deal, but it was tough. So where did we go? We went to your house. We went to Tom and Carol's house because it was close by. And that's when our car broke down, and your dad helped us with all of that, man. What a mess. But that jerk left his place. Years and years and years and years pass, and I go to Grace Baptist Church up there where Phil Hogan was, and this lady comes to me. I'm talking years in past. And I thought about that lady every once in a while, about her circumstance with her kids and being a bad thing. She came up to me, Brother Steiner, it's so good to see you. Tell me now again who you are. And she told me, tell me about your life. What's going on? Oh, Brother Steiner, God has blessed me so much. She introduced me to her husband. The guy is like a millionaire. I'm thinking, wow, praise the Lord. This dirt left her, and what is she going to do? But God blessed her abundantly. What a joy that was. Now, I hated to see the divorce, but God wasn't going to abandon her. He took that. It's a hardship for God. Number seven, be a visionary. I find pastors that are looking for something else to do. They're still pastoring the church. And I said, tell me about your church. What's going on? Oh, okay. What are your plans? I don't have any plans. I'm looking for another place to go. Boy, you know what I want to tell that guy right then and there? Why don't you just resign right now and leave this place? And I've seen it. Oh, in our years of ministry, I've seen them drain the church completely dry until there's nothing left in the church, and they sell the property, pay his back salary just so that he can get no vision. The Bible says where there's no vision, the people perish. So when the pastor, missionary, leader loses his vision, he's done. He needs to quit. I'm not saying you ought to quit. What I'm saying is you need to renew your vision here. I mean, if you ask us about our ministry now, I've got things on we want to do. We're preparing. We've just finished our first draft of our translation manual, 120 pages of all that we teach so that I can give it. I say, here, Pastor Hunter, take this book and go over there and teach this in Africa. He could do that with this book. We've got it all written out. It's been in the working for 19 years. All of our information in it. So we have that vision. So be a visionary. Don't lose that. And then the last thing, finish well with grace and joy. We start with zeal, remember, and enthusiasm. Finish well with grace and joy. My good friend, one of my best friends, Colin Christensen, he's in heaven now. He joined Bering Persis Sea Global with his global Bible translators. Made a trip to the Philippines with me. Brother Colin, we did not know it while he was in the Philippines. We did not know that he had a very large tumor in his stomach, was cancerous. He didn't know. Came home, had an accident on his lawnmower, tipped over, and something hit in his stomach, went to the doctor, they did the x-rays, and saw this mass and gave him just weeks to live. Never dreamed. He was a Bible translator. He translated the Sawano Bible for the Philippines. Brilliant man, Greek and Hebrew, just a great, great guy. Right before Colin died, people were talking with him, and he made this statement. This is the day I have lived my whole Christian life for. The day I will meet. My whole Christian life has all been all about this day. Now, you guys are young, and you may not think, may think, man, I got a long time. You don't know how much time we have. But every day, we ought to live it. Edna Hutchinson said, let our life's motto be to remain devoted for life. For every day is spent once and carries weight beyond the world. He also said, true commitment in ministry isn't temporary, but a lifetime pledge. God didn't just call Connie and I to be just church planters in Mexico. If that's what he wanted us to do the rest of our lives, we would have done that. But he called us to follow him to the very end. And that's what we're trying to do. He also counseled missionary candidates, and he said, walk softly. Death is narrowly watching your steps. The question is not whether we will die, but whether we will die in a way that bears much. God bless you. And I pray that you will finish strong and that God will help you in your life, not to quit, but to grow in his grace every day.